Faith here with a welcome toast. It was A.J. Liebling who said, people have made a triumph of the delicious apple because it doesn't taste like an apple, and of the golden delicious because it doesn't taste like anything. Please feel free to consume this show podcast in one bite, two bites, or oops, I ate the whole thing.
I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet, I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. Eat, drink, and be merry. Here's what's coming up on the show. We have Stuart O'Keefe. He's the author of The Quick Six Fix. And what he means is six ingredients, 6 minutes prep, 6 minutes cleanup. These recipes are so great. We're going to tell you about those. And we're going to start with something. You know how there's an abundance of vegetables at the farm stands, even in the supermarket, in your own garden. We're going to get to what to do with some of those. And the sell-by date. What can you have past the sell-by date in the store? You know that date where they say it must be consumed by? Is that real? Turns out, not so much. We're going to talk with you about that, too. My treasured food buddies are here, senior contributors Chris Prosperi and Alex Province. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Good to have you here. We're going to start with something that is so much fun. My nearest and dearest, Amy Gross, made a suggestion at lunch the other day. We were having tomatoes caprese, you know, with a little bit of pesto, mozzarella, buffalo mozzarella, and fresh basil from the garden. And she said, wouldn't this sauce that's in here, the juice, make an incredible martini? My eyes almost bugged out of my head.
Yes,
like, please.
I said, that is genius.
Bartender.
I jumped up and started to try and make it. And what I came to was a pesto Bloody Mary martini because I wasn't in the mood, nor did I have the time at that moment to drain the tomato for tomato water that takes 24 hours. So you're going to hear the creation of a cocktail. You'll hear us changing it, and it'll be posted on our website, a pesto Bloody Mary. This is the season. You've got basil out there. You've got an abundance of incredible tomatoes. Alex brought in, we're so thankful, all the ingredients. Alex, what have you got there?
So we have delicious pesto that I made. Remember Barb had that tomato recommendation? What are they called? The Sun Gold?
Barbara Pearson from White Flower Farm. Those are Sun Gold, and I have them in my garden.
So I grew these. So we have some
The only thing in my garden.
I
have herbs.
But listen, if that's your only thing, that's a good thing.
not so bad. So we got tomato juice, not tomato water. We've got our shaker and some
And you have spicy here, too.
Yeah, I brought spicy, too. We can see which one works best. Walk me through Amy's dream here.
You know, she wants tomato water, but we're going to do a version that I like. So, Alex, you've got pour in a glass. Let's mix this right up.
Like a flight attendant.
Chris. Little jars.
So what are you starting with, the spicy or the plain?
Well, let's start with the plain first and see how that works.
Into your cocktail shaker.
Put the vodka in first, right?
How much are you going to put in for the three of us? 2-3 ounces.
Yeah.
3 ounces.
Okay. We'll call that good.
Excellent. We happen to be using Kettle One vodka because we like it a lot.
Let's put a scoop of pesto in, right?
Okay. You're going to do 1 teaspoon of pesto
to
try it out. I don't know about you, but I love, Chris, at the restaurant, do you make this pesto?
This time of year, we're just floating in, right? We have basil outside, and we're just picking it every day.
You have to keep deadheading it. Alex, what's going in? You've got a cocktail shaker of ice, a teaspoonful or two?
1 heaping teaspoon.
Okay, and then some tomato juice going in. You could use your health food store version.
Well, this was just the plain Campbell's first, just the plain tomato juice with no seasoning or anything.
Oh, okay. Top goes on the shaker. Okay, go for it, babe. You ready to test?
It's pretty cold.
Okay. So in our house, we do 100 shakes.
100 shakes.
I don't mean to embarrass you.
On radio, we do 25.
We do 4.
Are we garnishing with these Sun Golds? Okay.
Oh, sure. Looks like gazpacho.
Floater?
It does look like gazpacho. We're going to try this out. Now, that was just with a heaping teaspoonful of homemade pesto, or you could buy it store-bought, plain Campbell's tomato with no spice in it, and ice and vodka.
Oh, that's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
Well, that
it tastes like a pizza.
Seriously?
It tastes like a pizza.
That is
really tastes like pizza.
Fantastic. Right there.
I'm calling this the pizza cocktail.
What should we do? Should we
try it? I want to
try it
with the spice, yeah, because okay. I'm a spice guy. I think the heat's going to make this even right. better.
Oh, my God. This is so good.
Doesn't it taste like pizza? Mm. Am I crazy?
It's the cheese, I think, right?
Yeah,
all the
it
cheese.
Tastes like pizza. Oh my this God. Is pizza in a – dude, you invented pizza in a glass. I don't want to eat my pizza anymore. I just want to drink
it. Who needs to eat when you can drink martinis?
No kidding.
Seriously?
This is genius. This is pizza in a glass.
It starts with Amy Gross. Second, you know, I'm just adding a little good. Saying, let's make it a pesto Bloody Mary. So Alex is starting again. Honestly, is how cocktails get made. Even experienced bartender people, and we like to make cocktails here on the show. This is how they do it. They're trying things, and we invite you to do the same thing. Your favorite vodka. Now, Alex is doing the same thing, 3 ounces of vodka. He's putting in the spicy V8 juice, a sun gold tomato for garnish. You could use a basil leaf to garnish, and his homemade pesto, a heaping teaspoonful. And here we go.
Are we counting?
Yes, 100, 102.
Who needs me to tell you what to do? That is really ridiculous.
I use the frostbite to tell me. Frostbite technique. All right. Too cold to hold, as Anthony would say.
Mm-hmm. Anthony DeSario, our cocktail guy. You know that sun gold tomato is really good.
Yeah, right. That just finishes it, right? I'm telling you, this is a pizza. A New
well,
York style
there's
pizza.
There's no oregano. And there's no garlic. No.
Oh, there's garlic.
Yeah, there's
pesto.
Garlic in the pesto.
Oh.
But no oregano,
so
you're right.
Pesto was fresh basil,
so passing
garlic,
it
lots
over.
Of garlic, pine
now
nuts.
Now we're going to see how this is spicy. All right, so.
I like the first one better.
First one much better mm-hmm. because the spice is overpowering every flavor, including the pesto for me.
Yeah.
So I'm with plain tomato juice. You can get it at your organic at your health food store. Mm-hmm. Maybe your supermarket. You can get just regular V8. So this is posted right now at foodschmooze.org. Schmooze is spelled S-C-H like school. All of our recipes on the show are up there, including the recipes from the Quick 6 Fix. 6 ingredients, 6 minutes of prep, and 6 minutes of cleanup. Really, really interesting book. Good recipes. Alex, thank you for bringing in the ingredients. And Chris, thanks for testing. Amy Gross, thank you so much for the basic idea of this.
I
think we've invented something.
I love it. Yeah.
So do we have any pasta hanging around?
No kidding.
I still have pesto.
Yeah, you could do a chilled pasta with this. Great, great idea. All right, let's move over to this story. So here on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, we sat up at attention when we read that most foods are just fine for days, weeks, and yes, even months past the sell-by dates on the package. But here's where we're going to start. There is one of my favorite Gregory drawings in the New Yorker magazine, and it looks like this. Let me describe it to the two of you. There are two cavemen, and they're seated cross-legged in this typical cave, and one says to the other, "Something's just not right. Our air is clean. Our water is pure. We all get plenty of exercise. Everything we eat is organic and free range, and yet nobody lives past 30.
Now that's a statement.
So I adore this thing because it's a punchline in 32 simple words, and it says everything about how tortured we are by fear, especially food fear. And it's not that we don't know. Of course, in the food world, many things are wrong. We know that. But the amount of fear that we seem to have is off the charts. It's sometimes promoted by media to attract eyeballs. We know that. So you don't need my take on this, but I just want to use it because it's a great way to get into this topic of how long past the sell-by date. This is what we learned. We have this posted on our site, foodschmooze.org. We tell you, based on a New York Times article, what is acceptable in terms of what you can consume past the sell-by date. So, Chris, you probably know this more than the rest of us, but as a general rule, according to the Times article, most foods that we consume can be eaten days, weeks, and this fooled me, even months past the dates printed on the packaging.
Yeah.
Is that a surprise to you, Alex?
Gosh. Yeah. Well, I'm always afraid that, you know, even if I'm near a date, that if you eat it the next day, you're going to get sick and be up all night sick
exactly.
or something, or get botulism or something.
There's two dates, right? The one date that people always misunderstand is the sell-by date, which has nothing to do with another date you see sometimes on it, not always because there's no laws here, is the use-by date.
Yes,
and
that's
even,
the one.
And even
the goodbye date.
Even the use by date is not an indication of when you should use it by. Because these are just arbitrary numbers that the food manufacturers or the dairies or if it's milk or whatever just put on there. There's no rhyme or reason to why it's sell by next Tuesday.
So
well,
how
why
close
is it
are
sell
you
by
to like food poisoning then?
No,
you're
not. So this is good. This is a great question. Yep. This is the Times article I'm quoting from. We have this posted. And if you have debates in your house, I think all of us do. I know in my house there's a constant debate about, but it's the use by, the sell by. I don't think we should.
Looks
should
weird,
we buy
smell this?
It's like okay. It says this. As a general rule, you heard me say, consume days, weeks, even months past the date printed on the packaging. And then someone from the Natural Resources Defense Council says, our bodies are well equipped to detect when food is spoiled. There's only one exception. You're saying use your nose, right?
Botulism.
But there's one exception. No. If the food is moldy. Mm-hmm. Not cheese, because cheese
can be moldy.
Cheese gets great because it's moldy. So let's take cheese off the table.
Okay.
But everything else,
back
if it's moldy inside the jar, you know, we put our fingers in the jar or we just take the lid off and after 5 days there's mold growing in there. If you see mold, unless it's cheese, get rid of it.
A given, right?
And if you see a speck of it, then it's there. Right.
It's gone.
Yes.
Done.
So,
don't risk it.
Yeah. The worst thing is a foodborne illness that is from a kind of bacteria, Listeria, that makes people really sick. So mold on food is going to do that. But all these sell-by dates, they're saying, no, I'm quoting, most foodborne illness occurs when food's been contaminated by a pathogen on a farm or at a processing plant. Not from decay or aging.
Aha.
Like
so
decay.
It's E. coli.
You know, if you're pregnant, you've got to be so careful. Yep. I'd be like crazy.
And young,
if I were pregnant, I'd be crazy
like the,
careful.
The very young and the elderly have to be very careful with this too.
So Listeria, you see, can grow. I will say get a jar of peppers. Use them. Put it in the refrigerator. It's in the refrigerator, so I think it's going to be fine. I take it out, and there's mold in the jar. Even in a refrigerator, Listeria can grow. So if you see mold on it, out it goes. If you have a pasteurized dairy product, including eggs and milk, perfectly fine past that sell-by date. Eggs can be eaten. This is the one that blew my mind.
Yeah,
eggs
it's crazy.
Eggs can be eaten.
Check
three
this out.
To 5 weeks after the use-by.
Not the sell-by date.
Not the sell-by, but the more liberal
use-by
date.
Uh-huh.
And she said, if you want to know if your egg, because you can't believe it, 3 to 5 weeks is okay. You just drop it in a glass of water. If it floats, it's bad. If it sinks, it's good.
Yep.
This article is posted at foodschmooze.org if you want to.
That's amazing.
Okay. And then we have a reference there, as the Times does, to another site where you can check all kinds of things.
So how much food are we throwing away?
Over half.
An enormous amount.
Sorry. Just under half of the amount of food we purchase in the United States gets thrown away.
Wow.
For this reason.
Yes.
For this reason, right? For the – it's past this date, this arbitrary, right? Whatever date that's on the food. The number one thing you have to remember is mishandling. Like what you said about the jar. If you want a jar of peppers or whatever it is you put in your refrigerator to last the longest amount of time, you set it. Keep your fingers out of it. Use a clean spoon or a clean tong every time you go in
there. Because you're introducing
stuff
into it.
Yes, the stuff that's on your finger, that can grow into this stuff that's
not
good.
Thank you, Chris, because how many times – I say on our website, how many times – I stuck my fingers into a jar to grab a piquillo pepper, to grab olives, and then suddenly there's something growing in there, and I haven't made the connection. So I see
it's
now,
as simple as
just
that.
Use my tongs, use a fork,
here's
anything.
One that always gets me, though. The sun-dried tomatoes that come in a tube say clearly, like, use within 2 weeks of opening. And that's, like, something that you hardly even, you know, go through a tube in 2 weeks.
Arbitrary.
And I always throw it away. I open it up and use it.
So I'm not doing that anymore.
I think the European model is the best. Do you know what they do? It was packaged, picked, put into the container on this date. Mm-hmm. So that's what they give you, right?
What are you supposed to make of that, though?
But that's at least an idea in your head. Okay, the eggs are 3 weeks old.
Okay.
Right? Because you know the egg was harvested because it tells you the harvested date or the packaging date.
So I have to learn
And you just did. You just learned that eggs can last 3 to 4 weeks, right?
Yeah. See, but the rules that all our food science people and nutrition people are listening now, but especially food science, and they're, I don't know if something is in vinegar. What's the rule? If something is in oil, if there's oil in the product, does that change it?
Because botulism you can get making vinegar, olive oil seasoned
with garlic.
With garlic.
Yeah.
But it has to be there first, right? Botulism doesn't just happen. The garlic has to be contaminated by the botulism already.
And then you put it in
the environment that it grows well. The rule is that just keep your food safe. Here's a good example. We pickle peppers at the restaurant, right? My chef's doing it right now. We get these banana peppers from a farm, and we pickle gallons of it. And these gallons of pickled, and they're just in pure vinegar, they can last in our refrigerator untouched for months, not weeks, months. But if someone goes in there to make their own personal sandwich, my staff, and they stick their hands in to pull the pepper out, which they should never do, we could lose that entire gallon in a few days.
So sterile, and you can see the
mold. Yeah, you can see the mold starting growing on top.
Immediately.
And we know exactly what happened. Someone stuck their hand in it.
I won't even. You know how you double dip with your own yogurt?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I just read that it ruins the beautiful bacteria in yogurt if you do that. You must keep it pristine. If you dipped your spoon into the yogurt once, don't go back again if it's been in your mouth. These kinds of things. All right, so it's at foodschmooze.org, and we have coming up a beautiful wine for you, the Quick Six Fix cookbook, all kinds of things coming your way that are fun. More mouth-watering conversation and fun ahead, as I promised, on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry. We are online right now at foodschmooze.org. The site is booming, and we thank you. We'll be right back. Okay, hope that first bite of the food schmooze felt like a hot biscuit with butter coming your way. Feel free to tell your food-loving friends worldwide they can enjoy the show and our online site at foodschmooze.org. Here's your second bite.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
Hey, kids in cars, that's for you. Also, we have a free podcast for you. What does that mean? It means that you don't have to miss a drop of pleasure on the show. You go to our website, you sign up for it once, and then we automatically send you the show every single week, and you can listen on your schedule. If you want to pass it on to somebody, you can. It's free, and then you get our delicious curated food, wine, events, cocktails recommended, and that's how everybody listens now. You go to foodschmooze.org, and you'll see it right there, how to sign up for the podcast. Click, and you're good to go. I'm with my treasured food buddies, Chris Prosperi, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, our wine broker, Alex Province, and Mark Raymond and Anthony DeSario will be back with us soon. Before we get to the cookbook, we want to talk for a second about this special wine that we have found. But first, the best corn stand you know.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, throwdown.
I am so...
No.
And we want to do this on Facebook, okay? Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I am so particular that if somebody says, oh, let's just go to this stand, it's closer, I will say, shake my head, no. I've got to have that ultimate... corn on the cob.
Sweetest. It is. And
I could eat it endlessly.
And for the record, I just want to say where I get my corn is the best out of all of you. Just want to say that. Throw
that
out there now.
Possible.
Yeah, it is. Mine is much better than.
Yeah,
I got a good place too, Chef.
All right, Chris, you go.
All right. Young's Farm, East Granby, Connecticut, by far the best corn on the planet Earth.
All right. Robin, what do you have?
I love Orisco's Farm. They're about a minute away from my house in Cheshire. We could be grilling something, and we say, like, we haven't planned well, and we can run down there, and in 5 minutes.
Before the burgers even are medium rare.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Exactly. All right, Alex Promise, what
do
you have?
So, in my backyard, there's Kohl's, and it is the best.
Kohl's
Farm, I think Kohl's
they're
called.
Where is it?
In Hartford?
In Madison.
Oh, Madison. Yeah.
So it's on, on
Route
the way.
Yeah.
No, it's...
Well, that's the thing with farm stands. Sometimes they're just on the side of the road somewhere, and you kind of luck out.
Sometimes it's not even a farm stand. When we were kids, we used to get our corn. It was a pickup truck parked on the side of the road,
honestly.
And it had a can.
It was an
honor system, and the corn was already in bags.
In Stony Creek, people started talking about this guy on the... You know, the corn. I said, where is he? He's in Madison. Well, where exactly? He's in a truck on the side of the road on Route 1.
Between Guilford and Madison.
I started cruising the road. All right.
Until you found a truck
on the
side.
He's right off the East River. He is also very good.
This guy.
Yes, yeah.
All right. So for me, because I spend a fair amount of time on the North Fork of Long Island, I go to two places, Sepp's Farm Stand and Latham's Farm Stand. And the corn is particularly sweet and snappy this year. We want to start this conversation on Facebook because we think that these stands and your taste about this is important. So go to these four words, Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, online, and let's start this conversation. And, if somebody has something to say about what it is that makes the corn so good for you, some people say it's not the sweetness, it's the realness of corn flavor that I remember from another time when sweetness wasn't leading. Other people like me, I like that forward sweetness in my corn.
How about corn? What's your favorite corn? Do you like the one that's all yellow? Do you like the ones that are
the white one,
butter and whatever, yellow
and
white, butter and sugar, the yellow and white one? Or do you like the all white one? The all white one and when they're little kernels.
Here's an article I read in the New York Times that said scientists say the most healthy corn is the one that is all filled with these dark red and purpley kernels.
Ooh.
And it's kind of hard to find those, but that has the most whatever is in corn that is good for our bodies. And so if I see that at a place, I will buy it just because it's the new kale.
Yes, the new kale.
So what's amazing is I was in your neck of the woods.
Yeah. Chris, then you had to go to Young's because there's no better corn on the planet. Oh, did I say that already?
Maybe I did. Maybe. So I was going to Arethusa to get peach ice cream.
Yeah.
And on the way there, I passed through so many beautiful rolling hills of corn.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, this is the most beautiful state this time of year.
We're in a great state.
And then I saw the corn growing right next to the road. You can see it.
Yeah, don't you want to just pull over?
You just want to pull over.
So a dear, dear, dear friend of mine, Sarah Krowich, did this thing for me. We went to a community garden. We took a plot. It was her suggestion, let's grow corn. And I thought, really, it's going to take up so much room. We're not going to grow anything else. We grew this corn. This is in Rockville, Connecticut.
Really?
It grew, and we had a little cornfield. And one day at lunchtime, she said, come to the community garden plot. I'm not going to say anything else. Just come. And when I got there, she brought a hot plate. She put it right next to our corn plot. Boiling water. She picked it from the cob. It was 60 seconds from the cob in the thing, and she brought out a stick of butter, and we stood in the rows, and we ate that corn. It was the corn of my life. Honestly, if you have a corn story, go to us right now, whether it's your favorite stand or how you ate the corn or what you do with your corn, go to Faith Middleton Food Schmooze on Facebook. I'm dying to hear these stories.
So there's one thing. I always see people pulling the husks off corn, like looking for something inside. To me, I always want to tell people to stop. The idea is Take the corn with the husk still on it. Don't peel it back. Soak it in water for 5, 10, 30 minutes, and then you grill it with the husk on, the husk chars, and then you peel the husk off, and you have the most perfect corn. As Matt would say, it's so sweet, you don't even need butter.
So it steams in there. That's what you're describing.
Burns on the outside and gets charry.
Smoky, steamed, nice. Can I give you a quick tip? Don't put salt in your boiling water if you do corn that way, because
it
toughens the kernels. Yeah. Just boil it, and you have to wait an extra 5 minutes. That's okay. It won't toughen your kernels.
I say you can eat it anyway. When you get it fresh, I don't even cook it.
You can eat it raw.
Like in my kitchen at work, we'll have like a bushel of corn on the table, and someone will actually be shucking it and then cutting the kernels into a bowl. And I'm telling you, you just go and grab a handful of kernels, toss them in your mouth. Oh my God.
Are we making corn chowder? Is anyone making corn chowder?
I love making corn chowder. Oh my God.
We got to remember to save the husks too. Yeah. Freeze them for this winter.
Yeah. What I do is I take the corn cobs after we've cut them off. Yeah. I crack them in half. I put them in a pot of water and then I simmer them for 45 minutes. It makes the best corn broth. And you use that for your chowder. And I'm telling you, it's heaven. It's just like the sweetest corn.
That,
you can freeze it, or you can just make corn stock out of it, or corn soup out of it.
Corn tea.
Corn tea. You can make whatever you want out of it. Like this time of year, when we're reheating vegetables on the line in the restaurant, we'll just take a spoonful of that and mix it into the vegetables.
These are amazing tips.
Sweet.
Oh. You've got to eat corn every day now.
And seriously, it's the time of year. As we get to the end of the corn, we last year just sliced off corn off the cobs, put it in plastic. Bags
throw it in the
into
freezer.
The freezer.
Yes.
Not only did we have it for almost a year, but when we cooked it, it didn't lose flavor from being in the freezer. It was fantastic.
And this is what people don't understand. You don't have to cook it to do that. Just cut the kernels off, put that in a freezer bag, and just chuck it in your freezer. You don't have to cook the corn
first. If you've got a favorite corn stand, if you have a way to use corn, if you know how to freeze it in a clever way, or you have opinions about salt, no salt, whatever it is, we are like corn centric on the show. It's my favorite time. That corn with butter and salt, and sometimes people do it Mexican
Kerrygold
style
butter.
With
cheese.
Irish butter.
All right. Here's where you go. God. You go on Facebook to Faith Middleton Fushmoos. We wanted a conversation going about this. Corn ice cream, you know, you can make. It's unbelievable.
Remember when we were kids, we had our own individual corn holders?
Yeah. They were yellow with the two prongs.
They had
it's
all
not
kinds.
A bad idea.
Do you remember those?
You'll poke your eye out.
I don't mind having my hands on the corn cobs. The only reason I would use it is if it's too hot, but then I find you can't bite into it either if it's too hot. So what's the point of the corn holder?
Just to get us kids involved. And it was just to get us kids involved, right?
Yeah, fun.
For dog owners, can I say something? Dogs cannot eat the cob of corn. So if you leave them around, it's like the number two reason dogs have to have surgery. They eat a cob and it gets stuck in their stomach, and then they have to have it surgically removed.
So
make sure you keep your dog out of the trash if you're eating lots of corn on the
cob. Good to know. All right. Here we go. We're going to move over now to this wine that we found, which we enjoyed. And it's a wine that's made by the Coppola family, the film.
Francis Ford Coppola.
Francis Ford Coppola. You'll see his Coppola wines, but this is a different one. This doesn't have their label on it. It's a kind of sideline for them. And this is called Manteo, M-A-N-T-E-O. And it's about a Native American tradition from Sonoma County in California. It is $17-$18 a bottle. It's fruit forward. It's plummy.
It's intense.
It's really, it's good. If you had a chill on this, it would be fantastic. We like this. Yeah. $17-$18 a bottle.
Food,
you want to bring a wine to somebody's house.
Especially barbecue if you're doing stuff outside
barbecue,
on the grill. Right?
We had it with pork roast. Yeah. It kind of goes with a lot of things.
So it's 30% Syrah, 30% Petit Verdot, 25% Cabernet Sauvignon, and 15% Petit Syrah. So it's sort of like a Bordeaux blend.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, these are all wines with a backbone, a little structure, a little oomph to them. So you could have this with chicken, pork, you know, even tomato sauce. This stood up. Chris made an amazing tomato sauce.
You can taste the warmth of the barrel, too. It's like 13 months in French and American barrels. So if you like barrel-y big reds.
Nice. It's on our website, foodschmooze.org. There's a thing to say at the wine store about the distributor,
CDI.
Which is Connecticut Distributors. So if you can spring for $17, $18.
We'll be
over. We've got a good one.
Invite us over.
We get several of them and we'll be over. So this is good. Coming up, we have the author of Stuart O'Keefe is an Irishman, and wait till you hear this voice. The Quick Six Fix. In there, we've got a black and white bread pudding. We have an incredible mac and cheese. The pork roast with some cabbage that Chris made for us, all straight out of this cookbook. So check that out. You know, it is hunting season for some people.
Or it's getting to be.
It's getting to be. Yeah. As there starts to be looking forward to a chill in the air. Chris, you did.
Yeah, for
this
friends.
He did this for friends. So, there are rules about all this stuff. So he didn't do this in the restaurant.
No.
He did this for just a private dinner. This was all hunted food. A bunch of hunters got together and they asked you to cook what?
We've been doing it for about 10 years now. And this year we had elk.
Oof.
I think it was from Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Elk
is
delicious.
We had wild boar from Texas.
Yeah.
We had venison from around here. And then the funkiest one of all is we had squirrel from the New Haven region, which was smoked, and we put it on top of a pizza.
Here's the thing. I grew up, and my father liked to go to a kind of game store, fowl and game, in Hartford.
Yeah.
My father would go there and buy squirrel. Yeah. They would clean it. It tastes exactly like chicken.
And let me tell you.
It's all acorn fed.
Yes, right. And who knew? Who knew in Connecticut there's actually a squirrel hunting season? I'm not sure when it is because this was frozen squirrel that we used.
I'm such a hypocrite. There are certain animals where I just think,
these guys.
We have one in our attic.
You've been raising.
He's coming in through the skylight.
You know, I'm really hypocritical because I love venison. Mm-hmm. The elk is so gorgeous. I love the elk meat. I love cows when I see them. Mm-hmm. But somehow in my way of being raised that the animal, anyway.
Yum,
the way it is.
I'll stick with the corn.
Chris, before we get to our bread pudding and the mac and cheese and all that and the pork roast, you're raising pigs on your farm property.
Oh, yeah, with the neighbors. It's two Berkshire hogs. I've named them lunch and dinner. And they're eating all the food from the restaurant.
Yeah.
So basically the trimmings, when we peel carrots, when we cut up watermelon, the rinds.
And how big were they when you got them?
About 40, 50 pounds. And now they're pushing about 180.
180
each.
So they have a ways to go, though.
So a little bit more, but not
three times.
Yeah, not
size.
Too much longer.
Can we make chorizo together?
We could make whatever you want.
If you save some, we can all make sausage chorizo sausage. It's really easy.
It is
very
cured paprika, and then we'll cure it.
Yeah,
we'll do it this winter.
Wow.
It would be a great time to do it.
This is your relatives did.
Yeah,
this
we my mom's made it as well. We could get her help if you wanted to try.
And again, this isn't for the restaurant. This is just for fun, just so we can have good pork.
All right, that's good.
Bacon.
Oh, the bacon. Wait till you try the bacon.
Oh, my goodness. Any piece of pork that you could give me, I'm happy. I love pork. All right, here we go. We've got coming up Stuart O'Keefe, one of the most charming people on the planet. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. He talks about bread pudding. We love the local. Please support your local food growers and food makers for on-demand podcast delivery of the Food Schmooze Party to your computer every week. And to find our food, wine, and cocktail restaurant recommendations, short, fun streaming videos, recipes, we're always online talking with you at foodschmooze.org. We'll be right back. We have one more mouthwatering bite of the Food Schmooze coming up. Here's something great to know about. Sign up for the app called NPR One. Just download it from the iPhone App Store or your Android device. And once you do, you can set WNPR as your local station. Couldn't be easier. Download the free app NPR One and start listening. Let's party on. More Food Schmooze.
It's just a little crunch, not like a faint. Every time we touch, it's just some little thing, not like everything I do.
is the Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York. By New York, we mean Westchester County, the East End of Long Island, the Hamptons. The senior producer is Robin Doyen Aiken. To hear the show on WNPR, it airs Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Podcasts and our curated recommendations are always online at foodschmooze.org. Of course, you can talk with us on Facebook to search Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. Now, we've been waiting for this. We just tried one of the recipes from the book. It was so delicious. And we're going to do a little bit of leftover summer because we've got a burger, an Asian burger coming for you. We've got a Yankee Irish mac and cheese. We've got a lot of stuff. We're going to talk now with Stuart O'Keefe. He is an Irish-born, California-based chef. He received his degree in culinary arts from the Dublin Institute of Technology. He trained in Bordeaux and the Napa Valley. This is an enviable life, I think. He has starred in Stuart's Kitchen on Irish television. He's been on the Food Network. He lives in Los Angeles. Seriously, he's lived in all the great places. You've got to somehow get, I don't know, Cannes and Provence. You have to get Provence in there. Stuart, welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Hi, thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, really, it's our pleasure. Give us a little bit of your philosophy. The book is called The Quick Six Fix. Six ingredients, Fix. 6 minutes prep, 6 minutes cleanup.
That's right. I wanted to write a book for so long, and I look at a lot of cookbooks, and obviously I do my research. I just always felt like when I would see recipes, I would just be like, oh my God, they're so long, there's too many ingredients, and sometimes you can't find the ingredients. So I just wanted to create a book that was back to basics, simple food, nice meals that you can just make at home at a fast pace, and just really minimize on that prep time and the cleanup time. When I get asked the question, like, what's the one thing or two things you don't like about cooking? And I'm like, the prep, because you just want to get going. You know what I mean? Like, you just want to start cooking the food, and that can slow you down. So I really wanted to keep that at a minimum. And then, I mean, I don't know who likes cleaning up, because I certainly don't.
Stuart, we're all making big eyes at you right now. It's like, ooh, we love him. So I'm surprised hearing this from you with your experience in the food world. You have people helping you, you know, as Chris talks about. You have a prep staff. So
yeah, I kind of do a lot of the prep myself. You know, I do a lot of private gigs as well, and dinner parties and so forth, and I bring a few people with me, but I kind of get scared letting anybody else do it, so I feel like I have to do it. But the cleanup, I'm like, everybody dive in. I don't care who wants to clean up.
I'll be outside.
Yeah, exactly. Growing up, like, my dad never liked to do it, so I'd always like see him complain about cleaning up after my mom would cook. So I think it really comes from something like that.
This is why the men are grill people.
Yeah, it's like, there's no cleanup.
Yeah,
exactly. Or brush. Done.
Everything is like, yeah, foil containers. Yeah. Like, everything goes in the trash afterwards. Yeah.
I was setting up an apartment recently, and I brought in to start with lots of paper plates and cups and plastic knives and forks, and I would get to the end of a meal and I would just throw everything away, and I thought, this is fantastic. Why aren't
we
all...
There's some great disposable things out there right now. They're the ones that look real, but you can actually throw them away.
I know, I'm embarrassed to say, but that's the truth. All right, let's talk about this Asian burger. Let me just say what is in here. You have this soy ketchup, and that is simply tomato ketchup with some soy sauce and hoisin sauce. Juice of a lime. I like that. And then what's in your burger patty?
The burger patty, then you have some rice wine vinegar, some sugars for a bit of sweetness to override the tartness of the vinegar, a red onion, like a minced red onion. You know, when I look back at this burger, it really is like the way my mom would make burgers when I grew up. Like, she would put a minced onion in there, she would put cheddar cheese in there. I added the vinegar in there just to give it a bit of sharpness. I kind of like that. And my mom would never just like buy meat and just put it on the pan. She always like, I have to put an onion in there, like season it up really well. Cheddar cheese. Oh yeah, like you know, let's incorporate all the ingredients in the burger so I don't have to put them on the burger. So that's kind of where this comes from. And I'm just like obsessed with Asian food. Chinese food is like my favorite food. Chinese ribs, forget about it. I could eat them every day of the week. And it's usually some kind of like sauce that's like on ribs, or like, you know, you have like a General Tso's chicken. It's kind of that soy ketchup kind of reminds me of those flavors. And that's why I chose that to go on the burger.
And as you know, I'm Scotch. And so I think in both our traditions, store, there is the meat pies that mm-hmm. have bread and spices and seasonings in them. It's not just the meat. There are things we put in the meat. And so
you
I think
do.
That's why
yeah.
that's happening.
I think it probably is a big thing from where we come from, because we yeah. do, like, we love the shepherd's pie. We like casseroles. We like stews.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
and that, we just like just put everything in it. So I think it's like shortcuts. We don't want to do the extra work, you know?
Just put it in the pot.
Throw it in there. It'll be fine. It'll cook.
So listen, I know that we are in this bumper season, and we are both anticipating the foods of fall, and the markets are mm-hmm. booming. There's an abundance of things. So I'm going to now switch over in your book. This is Stuart O'Keefe. His book is called The Quick 6 Fix. 6 ingredients, 6 minutes prep, 6 minutes cleanup.
Change your life. Change your life.
6 minutes.
This is really
in
what we
six
want.
Quick minutes.
Just to be clear, just to make it clear, it's not like the recipes are not 6 minutes, but they're around 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You can find me a recipe you can do in 6 minutes, which there are a few. I did one on Rachel Ray, which was awesome. It was like an Alfredo sauce in 6 minutes, which was cool because pasta only takes about 5 or 6 if you use like a cappellini pasta. But
very al dente.
Yeah, maybe that's the next book, like six-minute recipes. Oh, my God.
Then there's like a denture commercial. Okay, so we are nuts about mac and cheese, and this is your own, Stuart's Irish Yankee Mac and Cheese. This recipe is on our website right now at foodschmooze.org. You can see what it looks like. It's gorgeous. We've got macaroni, a little bit of canola oil, bacon that is diced up. Oh, we love that. Garlic and butter, a little touch of flour, the thickening of the sauce, some milk, sharp white cheddar cheese. In Britain, they've got gorgeous cheddars. Salt and pepper and frozen peas and grated Parmesan cheese. Okay, how does it come together?
Preheat that oven to 375. Boil your pasta. I always like to cook it about 2 minutes less than the package instructions because it just keeps continuing to cook. So give that 1 or 2 minutes before it says to be done.
So why are you cooking the pasta ahead of the baking?
We're going to be putting it back in the oven, so it is going to finish cooking, and you don't want it mushy and soft. There's nothing worse than mushy pasta to
me. Exactly.
So having it like somewhat al dente, it'll be fine. It'll finish off in the cooking process. Don't even worry about it.
Perfect.
Get your skillet, cook off your bacon, 4 to 5 minutes, add your garlic in there for another minute, and now you want to remove that, but you're going to keep all those fantastic flavors in the pan. And so with the same skillet, you're going to melt the butter, and you're going to whisk in the flour, and we're going to basically make a bechamel here. You're going to wait for like the paste to form when the butter and flour mix. Keep whisking, and you're going to add in the milk in a slow stream, and just keep mixing it. It'll start to thicken. It does take about 8 to 10 minutes for this process to happen, but I mean, come on, we're making mac and cheese, like, we can wait, right?
It's worth the 8 minutes.
Yeah, it is totally worth the 8 minutes. Look, it's worth an hour. If it took an hour, it's worth an hour.
I would spend a work day on this. Go ahead.
Right? I mean, if you could make this in the crock pot, we all would. You're going to add in the cheddar cheese in thirds, let the first batch melt, then add in your second batch and your third batch, season up with salt and pepper, and don't forget to taste it. Just taste it as you go along. Mm. You want it the right flavor for yourself.
Good, good.
Then you're going to add in that macaroni, the cheese, back in with the bacon and garlic. Don't forget that. Just keep it close to you. I tend to forget things too. You can put it to the side and you keep going. You're like, oh man, I forgot it. But if you did forget it, you can just throw it on top of the end. No
and
big deal.
The peas go in here too, don't they, at this
yeah,
point?
The yeah, the peas. Yeah, and the peas can be frozen because they're going to thaw out. And you can thaw them out beforehand. But again, if you forgot, no big deal. You're going to sprinkle finely with the Parmesan cheese. That's going to give a nice little crust on the top. And we're going to bake it in the oven for about 20 minutes. If you didn't want to bake it in the oven, I mean, it's good enough to serve from the skillet. Like, it honestly
yeah.
is. And what you
yeah,
could,
I was going to say.
And what you could do,
I like
what
it
you
like
could
that.
Do, if you wanted to get, if you wanted to put it in, we'll say, like, you know, a baking dish, if you wanted to get some, like, the breadcrumbs, what, the Japanese
panko.
Breadcrumbs?
Panko?
Panko breadcrumbs, yeah. If you wanted to toast some panko breadcrumbs on a tray and just sprinkle the breadcrumbs on top, that's an awesome way to do it, too. We used to do that in Napa Valley. I used to work at a restaurant also called Market in St. Helena, and they used to toast or breadcrumbs and sprinkle on the top at the very end before they send it out to the table. And it's just really nice to get that nice crunch in there as well.
So on our website, foodschmooze.org, Stuart's Irish Yankee Mac and Cheese, What strikes me about this recipe is so many people, because of the way I think that wheat is being manufactured, corporatized, mm-hmm. there are many people, this is not just a lifestyle issue, but many people who've been made sick by gluten, because mm-hmm. the gluten is higher in modern wheat production. This would be so easy to convert to gluten-free.
So easy.
Instead yeah. of flour to thicken the sauce, you would use, say, cornstarch. Right? And certainly yeah. Gluten-free pasta, and you're good to go.
And there's good gluten-free flours out there, too. I mean, if you look out mm-hmm. for them, and you know, Bob's Mills has some really good ones out there as well.
Yeah.
So you can also grab one of those, which would totally be fine. And look, you could have fun with the pasta, too. Try different shapes and sizes. Seriously. I love I'm obsessed right now with those massive, like, rigatoni uh-huh. rounds.
Big ones, right?
I'm getting those all the time. Yeah. I just got back from France. I was seeing my sister, and I made my bolognese sauce for them, and and I got these, like, massive, big, like, rounds. And
yeah, they're like an
obsessed.
Inch,
it was just
right?
It's like a, a hot cat to yeah. Chrysler.
Like, yeah, exactly. It's like, you're totally, it's so big. It's, like, so obnoxious. Yeah. But, I mean, all you need is about, like, six of them and you're stuffed, you know.
Okay, this is Stuart O'Keefe. We clearly adore him. His book is called The Quick Six Fix. It's on our website right now. Information about it, how you can get it, what's in it. And that is at foodschmooze.org. Plus this recipe. And Chris Presberry of Metro Beast just made this for us. And it is delicious, crazy delicious. It
like
is
in the studio right now. You guys are eating it?
Yes, yeah. We just finished. I mean, really, we feel that we owe that to our cookbook authors. And so Chris made for us your mustard crusted pork with apple cabbage slaw.
Oh, yeah.
And it was so good, Chris. Chris, tell me what it was like to make it. Too easy?
It was too easy.
I agree.
You take mustard.
I mean, I know it's my book, but I do agree with you.
You take mustard and olive oil and whisk it together. You take your pork loin, you dry it off a little bit, you put some salt and pepper on it, and then you take your hands and you just smother the pork tenderloin with this mustard olive oil mixture. Let that sit while you go and cut up a little bit of cabbage, grate an apple, put a pan on the stove, you put a little bit of vinegar, a little bit of sugar in the pan. And that's it.
It's so good.
And then you just throw everything in the pan. You throw the pork in the oven, 145. It's a perfect pink.
Where does the cabbage go?
You bring that little vinegar mixture up to a boil, and then you throw in your cabbage.
In the pan with the pork.
As soon as the sugar dissolves, you throw it in the pan, and then you just keep stirring it until it sort of wilts down.
Stovetop.
And it's it's too good for the amount of work.
See, I was thinking that cabbage was like your mom, your Austrian mom's like recipe.
No, and I like it because sometimes when you braise cabbage, like the German style, you cook it for like days almost. Mm-hmm. This one, 5 minutes, 7 minutes till it kind of wilted. I like the crunch.
You can totally get those like shredded cabbage already in a bag. If you're stuck for time, I mean, it can be time consuming shredding cabbage. I get it. You know, like Trader Joe's, they all have like cabbage shredded up and it's really good.
Yeah, I agree.
So there's shortcuts all out there.
Mm-hmm. So Robin, kids, would you make this on a weeknight, considering how, I mean, it just really comes together.
Absolutely. I'm making anything in this book if it's 6 minutes of prep and 6 minutes of cleanup.
I timed it. I had to time it.
It was really great.
Yeah, and it didn't take, I tell you what, the pork one didn't take 6 minutes.
Well,
I mean, that's the thing. And like, I was a bit lenient. So anything that would take me four, I would just be like, you know what, if they're not as fast as me, let's just put an extra minute or two on there just for people.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
This is good.
Sometimes I do recipes and it's like 15 minutes later and you're still working on it. This, I was standing there looking at the cabbage going,
totally
that's
agree.
It.
It was so...
That's really it?
I mean, we like to be able to test the featured recipe. Yeah. And so it was so, so good. Mm. Okay, so let's switch over to a dessert. I, for years, I don't know what happened to me. I did not eat bread pudding. And then I tasted someone's bread pudding at the table, and I just almost fell out of my chair. And I thought, I had no idea it was like this. What's wrong with me? So this is black and white croissant bread pudding.
Yep.
Imagine this. This is butter, eggs, heavy cream, whole milk, light brown sugar.
I'm trying to lose weight. Don't make this recipe.
A little.
60 minutes at the gym.
A little vanilla extract. Day-old croissants, bittersweet chocolate, white chocolate chips, and a little bit of either whipped cream or creme fraiche for people who can get it or make it. Okay, so tell me about how this came together.
I used to make these in small little ramekins when I first moved to LA, and I used to make them for dinner parties. No joke, I would make them for celebrities and in people's homes and so forth, and they were just obsessed. And when you'd actually bake them in a ramekin, the bread pudding would actually rise up. So it almost looked like kind of a souffle. It's just a combination of everything. I mean, you have croissants in there with like a creme anglaise. It's like,
oh my God.
It's just, I mean, you can't go wrong, you know. That's actually a great thing about this dessert. You can make this the night before, put it in that kind of baking dish and just press it down so you really get that nice soakage from the liquid and just cover it and put it in the fridge overnight.
If you don't use leftover croissant, you can use challah bread.
Yeah, challah. You can use brioche, which is really good too.
Oh. Anything loaded with butter.
This is,
and look, if you don't have that, you could use regular bread as well. You
and
could
add
use a raisin bread. It'd be so good. Too.
And just add butter. Melt some butter in there and throw it
exactly,
in.
Exactly. Just like another like stick.
This is on our website too, the black and white croissant bread pudding at foodschmooze.org. You are the best. I hope you will be a guest with us again, Stuart O'Keefe.
Anytime. Absolutely.
And the book is called, as you'll see on the website, The Quick Six Fix, 6 Ingredients, 6 Minutes Prep, 6 Minutes Cleanup. It's the way we all are living right now, unless you're lucky, really, really lucky.
Right.
Thank you so much, Stuart.
Bye, guys. Have a
great
day.
Thanks.
You too. We're on WNPR Thursdays at 3, Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, listen for my 60-second food schmoozes. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton. This is the place to enjoy the richness of life. Sharing our local and national discoveries with you makes me want to get up in the morning. The gang and I hope you'll come back soon and often.